That's good. Let's do some calisthenics to sort of warm up in here. I'm just going to walk around a little bit. I have nothing prepared other than this. Anyway, I thought through these thoughts in the evening, and I haven't tested them out in the morning. I did test them out at 8 a.m. It's now 10 a.m. in a little bit. So here we go. A musical introduction to this sermon this morning. Can you identify the song out of which, or the melody rather, out of which I've taken this little piece? Goes like this. Da 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 da. I think you all know that comes from Jeopardy. And you know now that I'm a sucker for Jeopardy. I love the questions. They are varied and easy and obscure and obvious and then difficult. Last week, I think it was, the big question that ended one of the episodes read as follows. If you know the answer, do not shout it out. Let everybody have fun here. So here was the question for the end of the episode. Identify two one-word quotations. Identify two one-word quotations from movies that aired in 1941 and in 1967. Da 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 da. The answer, which I did not get, to one-word quotes. 1941, Rosebud from Citizen Kane. And 1967, I'll tell you the movie and then you'll know, The Graduate. And what's the one word thing? Plastics, yes. Rosebud and plastics. But I will also tell you, if the question came from the Bible, that might have been different. Now, some people get really upset when they don't get the answers. Anyway, if the question came from the Bible, I would have been a winner. Because I know lots of things from the Bible. It's pretty rare if they have one of the Bible questions at Jeopardy that I can't get it. I mean, for example, I would have been able to quote pretty well the text we read this morning already from the prophet Isaiah. We're here in the second week of Advent. We're anticipating the birth of a great teacher. He'll arrive on December 25th. So Isaiah gives us a little hint about what such a great teacher might do. Here's what we read from Isaiah chapter 11 just a few moments ago. A shoot shall come from the stump of Jesse, who is the father of King David, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might. With righteousness he shall judge the poor. Righteous shall be the belt around his waist. In his time, the wolf shall live with the lamb, the leopard lie down with the kid. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the earth, waters cover the sea. It's great poetry, great. The text gives us a great combination of realistic and super realistic images. There will be a leader who will live and lead in justice alongside a world where wolves and lambs and bears and cows will all live together in harmony. Isaiah describes a transformed world. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding. With righteousness he shall judge the poor. In his time, the wolf shall live with the lamb, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord. But here's a question. Where will this vision of Isaiah come true? Where will this future unfold? Isaiah suggests it will happen, quote unquote, on my holy mountain. That's for the last verse of his prophecy. But where is that holy mountain? Well, I think it has to be Jerusalem, which is built on the hills of Israel, on a mountain, as it were. And I imagine the vision is not limited to Jerusalem, because that simply couldn't be sufficient for the grand dream. It must start in Jerusalem, but it has to extend to the rest of the land of Israel, which is what Isaiah would have known as biblical Israel. The whole land, says Isaiah, will become a kind of Eden, a magical place where wolf and lamb will live together, not hurting or destroying in the world. Which leads me to a second question. Do you believe these words from Isaiah? Could this really happen? Better still, is Israel, the state of Israel today, like this now? 2,500 years after Isaiah, does modern Israel embody Isaiah's vision? I'm asking you this because I would love you to join me this coming April on a church visit to Israel. We're going to see how and if Isaiah's prophecy has come true. Now, on the one hand, you already know the answer. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest on him, said Isaiah. With righteousness he will judge. Compare those words from Isaiah with the headlines out of Israel, and you know we have a problem. Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is under indictment for breaking the law no fewer than 3 instances. No righteousness there. The man may end up in jail. And on a trip to Israel, I remember going to the Western Wall. I wanted to participate with a group called Women of the Wall as they welcomed the new Jewish month. Pretty simple, right? Not so. According to the Orthodox men and women who crowded the wall's plaza that morning, there were hundreds of them pushing and shouting, shoving and spitting. It was a near riot in the city of peace. And the Palestinians, they continued to get the short end of the stick, let alone the fact that Israel's drivers are gruff and grumpy. And what's more, Jerusalem, the holy city, is poor and dirty. They will not hurt or destroy in all my mountain, says Isaiah. I don't think so. Then again, parts of our New York City are also a mess. And parts of our Springfield are also a mess. Just outside those doors. Crime, violence, gangs, drugs, guns, discrimination, and poverty. It's all right here. And yet I assume almost everyone here today would still want friends and family to visit here. That's because there's more to Springfield than dirt and despair. You know that. We know there are families here. Our families live right here. And in this city, or if you live close by, wherever you are in this area, you know we've got gardens, parks, and flowers. We've got teachers, schools, and colleges. We've got sports, playgrounds, and libraries. We're blessed with art and music. The true story of Springfield is the whole story of Springfield. The bad, but surely also the good. So it is for Israel. We want to go there this April to see the whole story. This April, as a church group, we'll see the bad and we'll also see the good, the present and the past, the present and the future. Here's a story that captures what I would call the whole of Israel. And it's the kind of thing we'll discover when you and I are there together in April. This story takes place back in March of 2002. It's the first morning after my arrival for a rabbinic convention in Jerusalem. We rabbis have arrived in Israel despite the fact that there has been a round of terrorist attacks throughout Israel for close to 2 months. But I'm there. It's 5:45 a.m. I'm awake in the hotel room, and I've just heard what sound like four giant firecrackers. The sound comes from Bethlehem, as does the roar of airplanes. I assume someone or something is being bombed as I lie there in my bed. 15 minutes pass by, and now it's the sound of chirping birds under a brilliant blue sky that keeps me from sleeping. This is Jerusalem during terrorist season. Except that's not really so. For inside this room, all I have is Jerusalem without any context. It's like me sitting at home watching TV or reading the headlines in the newspaper. That's a slice of life, which is why I decide I can leave my room and I can get out onto the streets of the real Jerusalem. And when I get down to the street a few minutes later, surprise of surprises, I discover Jerusalem thriving. I meet Israelis who were going to work this morning. Israelis who were dropping their children off to school. Israelis who are arguing about the latest political developments. Israelis debating what is fair for the Palestinians. Israelis in traffic jams. I meet Israelis laughing, crying, having coffee, and carrying on with life. All I had to do was step outside into the real streets of Israel to sense the pulse of life that beats steadily, strongly, and proudly in that country. Years go by, I'm back in Israel for another rabbinic convention. One day I've signed up for an excursion to the West Bank, except this is no standard jaunt for tourists. Our group is going to visit the first planned city for Palestinians. Who knew? Who expected that in the middle of the craggy mountains leading down to the Jordan River, we would find an ultra-modern city called Rawabi rising out of the desert? For real. The plan is for 40,000 Palestinians to call this beautiful place their home. So often we think of the Palestinians as desperate and poor. As I learned that day, the real picture is broader. Like you and me, most Palestinians want nothing more than a decent home and a good education for their children. I was there. I saw the dream. And if you join me in April, maybe we'll discover the whole dream as well. Or maybe we'll explore something I never considered. The day after our Rawabi excursion, those of us at the convention had the opportunity to participate in the Tel Aviv Marathon. We were doing the 5K walk or run. Once again, this was an Israel I had never met. There were thousands of people there. I mean thousands. Old men, old women, young. Didn't make any difference. Music filled the air. Tens of vendors were there. They were selling everything from Adidas to books to sunglasses to ice cream. And there was wonderful happiness in the air. Of course, there was a security presence all around the marathon site. But that was in the background. The real Israel, the real Israel was in the smiling faces, the loud music, the energy, the dancing, and the announcer who lifted words that I'd only heard in the prayer book before and blessed us all for our 5K walk run with this classic Hebrew phrase. May this be a good moment for us all. And indeed, it was. Indeed, when you go to Israel, you never know what little moment may blossom into a holy moment. Get yourself ready. This April, you and I will walk in the steps of Jesus. We'll be in Nazareth, Bethlehem, Manger Square, the Via Dolorosa, and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Will all of these sites be extraordinary? Maybe. But if not all of them move you, one of them certainly will. Or if none of them for some reason move you, then something before or after we visit them, something holy will touch you for sure. We're also going to walk in the steps of historic Jewish figures: King David, Isaiah, Hillel, Theodore Herzl, and David Ben-Gurion. Will every site connected with these people be extraordinary? Maybe. But if not, one of them at least will grab you. Or somehow, before or after one of them, something powerful will touch your heart and soul. How about Tel Aviv? That bustling modern metropolis that echoes Paris and Manhattan. Well, we'll go there too, but we're actually going to go to see the graffiti, because they have great graffiti, and we'll also maybe have a drink, touch the sands of the beaches of the Mediterranean, and we'll marvel at the architecture. Will Tel Aviv knock your socks off? Almost for sure not. Because Israel is sometimes just Israel. That's the whole story. Tel Aviv is mainly people. They may live in the only Middle Eastern country with a Declaration of Independence that's just about as good as the American one, but they're still only people. They are not little mini Isaiahs. They are not prophets, because each of them, like you and me, has to make a living, raise a family, love a spouse or a dear friend. Israelis need to live their lives. And like us, they do all of this, even though they happen to be holding on to a strip of land on the Mediterranean Sea that someone is always willing to attack. Despite that, most Israelis live their lives trying to do better. They live their lives believing that they are building the future. And that's Israel. That's the place I hope you'll want to see this coming April. You can register or even learn more about the details of the trip by visiting the cathedral's website. Yes, the cathedral's website. You just do it, which I did the other day to check it out, and bam! Israel 2020 will pop up as a banner, and you just hit it, and the details will become apparent. Or ask me any question you have, because I would love to talk with you about Israel, this wonderful place that is young, eager, argumentative, outspoken, brash, and hopeful. Israel is a very exciting place in its entirety, and you just have to go. You've got to go this April so that you can come home and share this poem with all your friends. The poem is written by Danny Siegel, an American who's been to Israel more times than I can count. As soon as you touch down in Israel, you'll understand what Danny Siegel means when he refers to this poem, which he calls My Personal Preference. So here's Danny Siegel. My Personal Preference. I think, he writes, I think now that I look back, I'd rather drive a taxi in Jerusalem than be the king of all of South Dakota or the rabbi in the great and ancient synagogue of West Rangoon. I don't know why, to be sure. Here the sun sets red, and there the sun sets red. Here the trees sway with infinite grace, and there the breeze moves the leaves with equally gentle fingers. I don't know why I'd rather drive a taxi in Jerusalem. But neither have I come to know why the seed becomes a daffodil and not a rose. Come to Israel. I'll show you seeds and lives that really bloom like roses. Amen.